Right, good morning.
Good morning.
So today we're going to start with a new topic for ASAP, for wider corporate reporting. And David, you're going to kick off. Don't touch the mic.
Okay, sorry. Good morning, everyone. Nice to be back at ASAP. Wider corporate reporting. I refer you to Agenda Paper 9, which is the slide presentation. I'm afraid the technology has got to be better of us here, so it's just on paper. I'm going to take you through what the staff, me, have been doing on wider corporate reporting, looking at an amazingly wide and varied landscape of codes, frameworks, standards, guides. Just to give you a flavour of the growing support there seems to be for reporting outside the kind of traditional financial reporting that we're seeing from some of the major stakeholder groups. Implications for the board's work and some feedback from a presentation I gave to the board in March and the advisory council in April. And opening up, I think, to seek your views on the whole scene and what, if anything, the board should be doing, including the possibility of whether the board revisits its 2010 practice statement on management commentary, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, to update it for the developments that have taken place. So a little bit of background, you'll recall that in the last review of structure and effectiveness of the organisation, the trustees looked, amongst other things, at what the board should be doing in the field of wider corporate reporting, and whether it should go beyond its current policy of coordination and cooperation with bodies such as the International Integrated Reporting Council, the IRC, and the Corporate Reporting Dialogue, the CRD, which is a grouping of 8 organisations responsible for standards in various areas around the world. The trustees took the view that the current strategy was appropriate, and in response to their request to views, most people said, yeah, you've got it about right, although there was push from some quarters, including the IFRS Advisory Council, that maybe the board should go further. One of the things the trustees did ask for was that there should be some staff resource devoted to looking at the landscape and looking at the potential implications for the board, which is where I came in. The outcome of the trustees' review was noted in the outcome of the board's agenda consultation last November. So certain of the proposals in the research pipeline, in particular in the agenda consultation, had in particular some climate change implications that might be taken on. I'm thinking in particular of extractive activities and pollutant pricing mechanisms. In terms of what I've been doing since last September, I did some initial research of what's out there in terms of frameworks and codes, and looking at the support for reporting on a wider range of issues. Monitoring developments in the field, in particular the Financial Stabilities Board Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, and the FSB Task Force reported at the end of June, so I'll give you a little bit of flavour of that. We've been enhancing our contacts with the IRC and with some of the other bodies, and of course with the Corporate Reporting Dialogue, Ian McIntosh has now taken over as chair of that body, so we have good relationships with them. I've done some work on mapping the 2010 Management Commentary Practice Statement against the Integrated Reporting Framework that came out in 2013. And if you, assiduous readers of board reports that you are, if you look at the March 2017 papers, paper 28B, will give you a flavour of how the practice statement matches up with the IR framework. And as I say, I presented to the board in March and to the advisory council in April. In terms of what we're seeing in the landscape, there is a lack of globally accepted standards on reporting for value creation. There's a similar lack for sustainability, although I think that the GRI, the Global Reporting Initiative, comes further, it comes closest, although almost large extent its GRI standards are applied on a voluntary basis. In terms of estimates of the number of frameworks out there, well, pick a number. OECD and the Climate Disclosure Standards Board research suggested around 400. 2016 Carrots and Sticks publication by KPMG and a number of partner bodies had, I think, 383. The UN Principles for Responsible Investment had over 300. And a new reporting exchange that's being coordinated by the Climate Disclosure Standards Board claims there could be over 1,000. So stepping back from that, you start to think, well, that just looks daunting. But it is clear, daunting or not, that there's growing support for wider reporting of some form or other. And if we start with the user community and investors, we're starting to see some strong evidence of investor support. For example, the board has its own Investors in Financial Reporting programme, so there's 18 participants in that, including BlackRock, Hermes and so on, and 17 out of the 18 have stated policies to say that, you know, we should be integrating wider reporting, whether it's in terms of environmental, social, governance or some other label they put on it, into their investment analysis and decision making. The UN Principles for Responsible Investment now has something like 1,750 signatories. Now, the extent to which those signatories have signed up, follow through their signing, the PRI, to action, discuss, but it's clear that it is a significant body of opinion with assets under management in excess of US$60 trillion. The ICGN, the International Corporate Governance Network, is a strong supporter of IR. CFA Institute is a supporter of integrating ESG. So you see that there's a momentum growing, and that's being reflected, I think, in the regulatory and policy-making world as well. The United Nations has for many years had various initiatives, Global Compact looking at social and environmental issues, business and human rights with the Ruggie report that came out a few years ago, environmental programme, and at the end of 2015, the UN came up with sustainable development goals, 17 goals basically to eliminate poverty, 169 targets, one of which relates directly to better corporate reporting on ESG issues. The problem in looking at the UN, where the focus now seems to be on the sustainable development goals, is that I've yet to see a map of how the initiatives that they've had throughout the years map into that. So there's still the pieces of the jigsaw in the box, but I still haven't seen anything to put them together. OECD's also been in this territory with its guidelines for multinational enterprises and principles for corporate reporting. Probably seen less from the G20, and I don't know if anything will come out of Hamburg today, apart from riots. Nice to see, Andreas, that Germany's so well ordered, and they're obviously very happy that President Trump is there.
Cheer fireworks, yeah. More fire than works.
But let's move on.
But there have been general statements from the G20 in communiques in support of sustainable growth and long-term value creation. I think the closest we've come is with the Financial Stabilities Board, and it's setting up the task force for climate-related financial disclosures. And that body reported at the end of June its final recommendations, with specific recommendations in four areas, so governance, strategy, risk management, and metrics and targets. Now, when we looked at the task force interim consultation report that came out at the end of December 2016, we thought, okay, it looks like we're talking about narrative disclosures in the front end of the report, so management commentary and the ilk, rather than something that would directly impact the financial statements. There were two paragraphs in that interim report, and the same two paragraphs are in the final report, talking about accounting considerations, where they merely refer to the IS 36 and IS 37 and their US GAAP equivalents, talking about the importance of those, but not suggesting, I think, that they should be amended in any way. I think it's more people might need to look at those standards for impairment and provisions with a climate related hat on. So I think in that respect, if this board did anything to do with management commentary, then we would have to look at the TCFD's final recommendations in that light. We've also seen developments in other areas. The European Commission, for example, has just come out with its guidelines on non-financial reporting, which look almost do what you want in terms of frameworks to apply. They don't specify anything in terms of a mandatory framework. They just refer to the requirements in the directive and then say, well, to meet those requirements, you might use GRI, you might use this, or you might use that. Looking around the piece as well, we've got national developments in the UK, strategic report. We've had various developments in France, in particular most recently with the energy transition law requirements. In India, SEBI has now put out requirements for the top 500 companies to do business responsibility reporting. China, we've seen the Ministry of Finance and latest five-year plan. There seems to be some kind of push towards integrated reporting as well. USA, all gone a bit quiet on the SEC's disclosure effectiveness paper that came out last year. Maybe I'm not surprised. I'll pass over quickly. It's stock exchanges we're also seeing as well, a lot of movement. There are now 63 exchanges signed up to the UNPRI Sustainable Stock Exchanges Initiative. So we've got perhaps the leader of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, of course, now it's, I think the listing requirements now incorporate King IV fully. Hard to find that they've done it, but that seems to be the case. Singapore Stock Exchange are requiring sustainability reporting on a complier explain basis from 2018. Taiwan requires certain companies in industries and above a certain size to do corporate responsibility reporting. We've seen recently ESG guidance coming from various Baltic exchanges and the London Stock Exchange Group, which covers both the UK and the Borsa Italiana. Within the accounting profession, we're seeing a lot of support. IFAC have come out very strongly in support of integrated reporting. Accountancy Europe, FEE, as was, has its Core and More initiative. It's in this same territory. And if you look at the major accounting network, the top six, at least, are all represented on the IRC Council. Although, if you look at the accountancy firms individually, they also seem to be doing their own variants in some way or another. Companies, there's evidence that the largest companies around the world are doing some form of integrated reporting and or sustainability reporting as well. In 2016, 82% of the Standard & Poor's 500 index published sustainability reports. The GRI claims there's about 5,000 companies doing sustainability reports. The IRC claims around 1,500 companies are doing integrated reporting to a greater or lesser extent. Now, how many of them are compliant with the IR framework remains to be seen. But we do seem to see a big push led by South Africa. Integrated reporting also seems to be big in Asia. I mentioned there that in Japan, it's expected that over 300 companies will produce integrated reports in 2017. and we're seeing it happening in Singapore, in Malaysia and places like that as well. Why should they be doing this? Well, there are some papers coming out from academia that suggest that it's good for them. That companies with robust sustainability practices and reporting deliver improved economic performance. Oxford University and Arabesque Partners did a piece, a meta-study back in 2015 of over 2,000 studies, and found almost 90% found that companies with such robust practices demonstrated better operational performance. Another review of over 2,000 studies undertaken by Deutsche Asset Wealth Management and the University of Hamburg found that the business case for ESG reporting was well-founded. Initial academic evidence coming out on integrated reporting shows that, you know, it can deliver benefits. Mary Barth, once of this parish, and a number of colleagues did a paper on South Africa and found positive associations in relation to stock liquidity, firm value and expected cash flows. The problem with the academic papers around IR is that there are differing views within the within academia about it, and there are some who feel it's been hijacked by the accountancy profession and so is not fulfilling its initial, you know, promise of sustainability for the world. But I'll pass over on that. So all that suggests that we know the way the direction is going, that people want reporting on a wider range of issues. So with that in mind, to say, well, should this board just sit there and think, well, that's all very interesting, nothing to do with us, or should it do something more? And I think one thing, talking to the board, that's clear that, you know, there is no appetite, there's probably no skill as well, to get involved in developing fully blown sustainability standards or something like that. And there are bodies out there and bodies grown up more recently, such as the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board in the US, who have got into this space. But there is an issue of the board thinking more widely, well, how does its standards fit within that wider framework and that wider developing framework? In terms of what's the problem, I think the fact that there's no kind of universality of standards that might apply across the piece, and say apart from GRI and the purely sustainability side, if you come into the field of the annual report, integrated report, and what you might put at the front end, I think there's a confusing mix, as I mentioned, the numbers of frameworks around. And some bodies are starting to suggest that maybe this board should pick up something in that area. On one of the slides in the paper, I gave you the quote from the film, as was now Council of Europe, called the Moore paper. And more recently, the ICAW, the English and Welsh Institute of Chartered Accountants, published a paper in June saying what should be done in this wider area. And one of their suggestions was that either the IFRS Foundation or IOSCO pick up the mantle as a kind of umbrella body to try and bring together and coordinate this confusing mishmash of frameworks and standards. You could see that as something of a hospital pass or a interesting challenge. But there is, you know, an appetite in that territory. That ICAW report also gave a slight plug for maybe the board updating and revising the management commentary practice statement to reflect developments that have taken place since 2010. So all this was looked at by the board at its March 2017 meeting, and a number of options for action were put to the board. One was, should any of the existing standard setting activities in the research pipeline be moved to the active research agenda? So we're in the field of extractive activities again, pollutant pricing mechanisms or provisions. I don't think the board showed any great appetite to accelerate any of these, which of course would only be looking at part of the wider reporting issue individually. And I think a number of those particular projects are dependent on the finalisation of the conceptual framework as well. So there's an element of, well, let's wait and see. The alternative option presented to the board was to say, well, should we look again at the practice statement and update and revise it? In looking at that, the board acknowledged that it wasn't something that was included in the agenda consultation or the work plan that came out. So there was an issue of saying, what would the impact be on resources? And both the board and the advisory council, I think, expressed a degree of caution on this and said, well, could we have some further work done before any proposal, if indeed it comes back to the board, is taken forward. Now, I think my view, and I think, well, Hans is not here, probably his view as well, is that we do see some merit in the board doing something in this territory. It's an existing product. It's somewhat out of date now because of the rapidly changing world. And some people said, well, okay, it was put out as a piece of non-mandatory guidance. Did anyone even look at it? Which is a fair point, but I'll come to that in a minute. But it does share much in common with integrated reporting, the integrated reporting framework. But where does it need updating? Well, of course, now value creation has become a recognised phrase. Back in 2010, the IRC had yet to really get going, so this wasn't recognised parlance. Reporting on a company's business model. Now, those of you certain veterans remember the old board under David Tweedy and co. You mentioned the words business model and you had to duck below the desk to avoid the objects being thrown at you. But it's clear that business model reporting has taken hold. And it's something I think that we're seeing in the investor community that they want to see. What is a company in business for? How does it say that it creates value? What we're seeing now is a greater emphasis on integration, connectivity, and linkage. The management commentary practice statement did refer to integration, which was a clever prediction by one of the authors of that practice statement at the time. We'll have a competition on who that might be. I won't reveal my sources here. And explicit reference to a broader range of capitals. That's the phrase used in the IR framework. And the use of the word capitals, I think, has caused some confusion and a little bit of angst around people. The practice statement doesn't use that. It talks about resources or resources, risks and relationships. But what it doesn't do is to go on to say, such as social issues, environmental issues. It leaves it very much at that generic level. Whereas if you come down into some of the jurisdictional pieces, they do. Now, whether that's a function of reflecting legislation, as in the EU, where the directives refer to social and environmental and employee matters, and then that gets reflected in national regulation and legislation, such as the UK's strategic report guidance. So they're the main kind of areas where we think that at an indicative stage we'd need to update. And we think it could add value. That's the trick. Can we update something that would add value rather than just add to the confusion? And that's something we need to think carefully about, and any views welcome. In terms of the influence of the existing practice statement, some people say, oh, nothing at all. In terms of individual companies, there's only a very few who have actually said they follow all or part of it. Although two of them are HSBC and SAP. And of course the well-known Kaztrans Oil as well. So, but good to see. They're looking for disclosure and transparency. But it has had an influence on other frameworks around the world. And the IRC acknowledged in preparing its IR framework that it was using the Management Commentary Practice Statement as one of the source documents. The Climate Disclosure Standards Board framework in 2012 was littered with footnotes from the Management Commentary Practice Statement. the German standard GAS 20, if you look in the basis for conclusions, they said they drew on the management commentary practice statement as well. In Malaysia, the NASB just reproduced it wholesale as their statement of principles number 3. Although Malaysia seems now to have moved on to say, with the Bursa of Malaysia saying integrated reporting is encouraged. Even in the UK, the FRC strategic report guidance drew on it, and it's also referenced in ASIC in Australia in ASIC's OFR guide. It's also been used as a benchmark in some academic literature assessing the quality of narrative reporting. Now, I'm not today giving any views on the quality of some of this academic reporting, but the fact that it does seem to be a recognised benchmark that's been used quite often. And on one of the slides, slide 22, I gave you a quote from Eumedion, the Dutch corporate governance forum, in response to the board's agenda consultation back in 2011, where they said, "We hope that management commentary will gain more acceptance globally as we see great merit in its use as a fundamental document for any integrated reporting framework." And within that context, I at least see the board as being well placed to ensure a good fit and connectivity between financial reports and the wider non-financial information. And I think one of the important things for the board to consider is how do you ensure integrity and discipline in the way that financial figures are reported in management commentary and elsewhere. I mean, we know from the experience of non-GAAP, can you trace the IFRS figures through to adjusted earnings, etc., etc.? So some degree of discipline, or at least encouragement for discipline, would be useful. Issues for consideration if we do anything. We're currently doing further preparatory work trying to make put together a case for the board to at least consider whether it should do any work in this area. Obviously, the scope of the project would be important. Whether it satisfies the factors for inclusion set out in the agenda consultation feedback statement. How would we work with other bodies, given the read across to those wider reporting, other frameworks, and so on, the potential risks and benefits, as well as resource implications. So my purpose today is just to get initial thoughts and views from you on this, in terms of how you view the kind of wider reporting scene, and whether you're recognising that there is a push for reporting on a wider range of issues in your jurisdictions, and what your thoughts are on what, if anything, the board should be doing in this area, and whether you see merit in looking to update and revise the practice statement. You might have other ideas, but from our perspective, we have an existing product. If we did update it, it would be a kind of evolutionary process and a further step, and the board taking them into this wider world without a full-blown leap. So with that, Sue, I'll hand back to you and invite any questions.
Thanks. And from memory, when we talked about it at the board, David, a couple of things were discussed. One was what the board, at least initially, thought it didn't want to do, which, if I remember correctly, and I'm looking for you to check, is not choosing a particular framework we thought we wanted to sort of endorse and build upon as such, but sort of looking more at the connectivity, if you like, between the financial statements and these other aspects?
That's correct. We didn't say we will back this horse or that, to the expense of that one. It's trying to pull the trick of having something that another framework could look at and say, okay, we can see how we fit with that.
Yeah.
That's a challenge.
And also, I think Hans was focused very much on where there's references to sort of figures, if you like, outside the financial statements. Yeah. So there's connectivity
between those
two things and some discipline around that. So those were some of the sorts of discussions we had. Kim?
Yeah, I certainly think that the board should be doing something in the space. But, I don't think that the board should be taking the leading role. I think that in the context of wider corporate reporting or integrated reporting, I guess ideally, you know, it almost looks like the IIRC should be, you know, the one running with that. And I think the board needs to have a look and consider, as Sue just mentioned, how the financial information sort of fits in into those. So I certainly don't think that the board should be trying to, you know, establish a separate requirement or document which should be produced sort of, you know, instead of an integrated report. I think that's just then, you know, duplicating, you know, processes and, you know, etc. But I think that where there's financial information in an integrated report, that's where I think the board needs to play a role. Now, as I say, from a South African perspective and looking at some of the practices, you know, the integrated report, you know, really tells the business story, the business activities, and all of that type of thing. And then you say, okay, but so what financial information is included in there? And then at the moment, you know, even in South Africa, we don't have any requirements, you know, per se. Well, they're not prescriptive as what should be there. So practice has developed that typically companies would put in an income statement, a balance sheet, sometimes not even a cash flow statement. And that might be the extent of the financial information. With no notes, or anything in the integrated report.
Sorry, but do they reflect any of that in the narrative of the integrated report up front? So if they attach the pure statement or the income statement and the balance sheet, do they refer to that in the upfront narrative?
Okay, so I suppose because these documents ideally are meant to be 100 pages or so, that's sort of the magic number that I think a company aim to achieve. It's not really appended as such. It's a part of the document, but there arguably may not necessarily be too much integration in terms of talking to all of those numbers and that type of thing. Again, sometimes you might find within the commentary part, there's a lot of discussion on or using perhaps non-GAAP numbers, sometimes without any definition of what they are. So it could be, you know, normalized earnings were, you know, up by this amount or whatever. Well, that's great. What are normalized earnings or what are core earnings? That type of thing. And then it would be, here is summarized in financial information. Now, that is certainly an area which I think the board should be looking at, is where there's reference to summarized information. Well, what could or should that be? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, particularly, well, there's no assurance expressed in South Africa on the overall integrated report as such, but where there would be references is now on the financial information. And then, of course, the challenge is it simply extracted from the full set of financial statements? So there's no assurance provided per se on the information in the integrated report because it's not a full set of financial statements. So, you know, a lot of us have been very careful to say that you can't say that this fairly presents the financial performance because it doesn't provide you with the whole picture. So the risk, I think, that the board needs to be careful of is that the full set of financial statements potentially losing its relevance, losing its importance. Now, companies in South Africa, what they used to do is they used to send out the full set of financial statements to shareholders. Now, with the advent of integrated reporting, they only send the integrated reporting financials to shareholders. They don't send the full set of financial statements to shareholders, but it needs to be made available. So where is it made available? On the website. And if you were to ask many companies to look at the downloads, how many people actually go and download the full set of financial statements versus the integrated report? Well, yeah, not too many. So then the question is, so what's the role of the full set of financial statements versus the role of the integrated report? Now, I suppose, you know, reading through 100 pages is, you know, arguably a lot easier and, you know, quicker than reading through, you know, 300 or 500 pages of information. So it's also a case of saying, so who's the target audience for that full set of financial statements versus what's in the integrated report? And I think that's where the ISB needs to play a role in saying is, okay, in the integrated report, is there a subset of information that comes from the full set of financial statements that should be in an integrated report? So, you know, I think with there being a lack of real guidance as to what the ISB thinks should be in summarised financial statements, practice has, has sort of emerged. Now, from a South African perspective and the South African standard setter perspective, you know, we've said, well, we don't think that it's appropriate just to include an income statement and a balance sheet, you know, in the integrated report. So we've been saying, well, we think that we should be following the principles of IAS 34, even though, yes, it's interim financial statements, but it's sort of condensed, you know, information, and you should be using those principles at a minimum in terms of what should be in your integrated report. Now, whether or not to say, you know, that is the best approach or not, but that's, you know, what we've been encouraging people to do. So I think that the board should be playing a role in deciding, you know, what should be in the integrated report with regards to financial information. And then, you know, yesterday we were talking about the disclosure, the Principles of Disclosure project. And, you know, I think there as well, in the board looking at disclosures, I think it's also a case of, well, you know, where are these disclosures going to be provided? Are they being provided in an integrated report, you know, or are they being provided in this other set of financial statements? And again, who are the users of those, of that information? Because one of the proposals that the staff have made in the Principles of Disclosure project, you know, in terms of setting disclosure objectives, is to say, well, should they be done along the lines of the entity's business activities, which, you know, fits more closely with integrated reporting. So you're trying to integrate and tell that whole story. So I think what we need to move towards, you know, using the word integration, is that there is really an integrated story. It's not like there's sustainability information and there's all this information. Oh, yes, and then here comes the financial information. I think it's, you know, I think ideally it really needs to be integrated. So I think the ISB needs to play a key role in that process and fitting in where there's discussions or reference to financial information.
Thank you. Andreas?
Thanks, Sue. Let me start by commending you, David. I think that is an excellent presentation. It sums up, I think, the case quite nicely. I have vivid memories to the World Standard Setters Conference 2 years ago, where exactly that question was asked, should the board do more? And I think there was a general tendency amongst participants that are also in this room and said, well, be cautious as you summarise. I think the landscape has changed dramatically over the last 2 years for various reasons. And I think it would be foolish for the ISB not to take up that movement. That isn't to say that you ought to be looking to become a standard setter in the area of greater corporate reporting, non-financial reporting. But a few remarks probably on that side. I think the distinction between financial and non-financial is anything but arbitrary. Because non-financial sometimes are labelled pre-financial, yes, but I think that's much, much better, because really many issues that start out as being non-financial could or may become, and most likely will become, financial in a later reporting period. So the question is there really that barrier? Are we too much confined about our reporting period? And should we be taking a more holistic approach? The other bit that I would like to share is, I think we have seen a change in the user base, and that's something that might inform as to how appropriate it might be for the ISB, shall I be saying, merely to look at the practice statement. So if we think about CSR and ESG reporting in Europe, I think they start from a different angle. It's not so much about what are the climate-related impacts on the entity, but it's rather the reverse. Mm-hmm. What are the implications of the entities doing on society, on climate-related things, on human rights? So it's not an outside-in view, it's an inside-out view that larger society requests. Now, if you look into the conceptual framework as to who you define as your primary user, that's certainly a totally different audience.
Yeah.
And I think that is something where I believe the board needs to have a look at. You may not like that, given your timeline as to when you want to publish your conceptual framework, but I think it starts all there. Because the objective of financial reporting is valid for financial reporting, but I have doubts whether it fits wider corporate reporting. Same goes for the user. So they are part of the user base, but I think if you say, let's assume that your user base would be society at large, I think that some accounting standards would look quite different, actually. So in terms of what the board then should be looking at, I think the practice statement as I see it, to me, honestly, has limited merit. And that's not that I say don't go there. I think it's probably a low-hanging fruit for the board to do it. As you say, it's already there. It could be updated. But I think you should not forget the legal context in Europe. So when we developed your reference GAS 20, and that was modeled after a predecessor standard, which dates back into the early 2000s, I mean, we have audited management commentary. We have audited management reports in Germany. And that even goes beyond the minimum standard that applies to Europe. The management report is part of a set of financials. So vis-a-vis the management commentary that the ISB has, it's not a voluntary document, it's a mandatory document. And we've gone even one step further to make it auditable. So unless you have that rigor coming to the document, I don't see that there will be a big, big push in advancing wider corporate reporting. So where I could see real merits would be, I think, in two ends. One would be looking, really taking a serious look at the conceptual framework and think about where you lay the foundations for financial reporting and ask yourself, do they equally hold if being applied to non-financial reporting? And if you tie that more to robust principles and concepts, if you think about issues like materiality, we have a materiality definition. You're just about to update it, amend it. Mm. Well, GRI does have a materiality definition. How do the two tie into each other? I think it's about these basic concepts where it would be worthwhile looking into. Does prudence mean the same on either side? Does consistency mean the same thing? Does comparability mean the same thing? Because once you want to integrate, you need to make sure that the foundations really are the same and tie into each other. And that's an area where I think you could start work and convince the other side, maybe through the corporate reporting dialogue, to do exactly the same thing so that you make sure that the foundations really are robust and the same so that you could work on it.
And I think, Andreas, that you raise, for me, what's a really fundamental question. I chaired a panel at the conference, the European conference that we had last week, and one of the things that really struck me when I was reading, preparing for that, was this difference in user perspectives. And I think that it's a really important question for us as a starting part of the research, and David might already have thoughts on it, because I think we could go two completely different ways and they have massive implications in terms of both the scope of the project but where we might end. One would be to do something much broader and to start thinking about users in this broader sense that people are. My fear with that is it quickly turns into a public policy type role, which is completely
absolutely
different. But and it has massive implications. The other approach I think we could take would be to say our focus is still on the same primary users that we think about in the conceptual framework that we're just about to confirm with all of our materiality concepts, and all of that is still intact, but we think they need a bigger set of information to make their decisions. Mm. And our role is to still keep those primary users in mind and to sort of do the project that way. But there's no right or wrong answer to me. They're just two very different approaches.
That's true, but I think you also need to take into account what jurisdictions are mandating. Because as long as the policymakers are saying this piece of information ought to be going into the annual report, then you're stuck somehow. You define what financial statements ought to be delivering as information for a well-defined specific group. But if policymakers say, I also want you to disclose country-by-country reporting. So, if the annual report, if the financial report is to develop as a social justice document or something like that, I would be very, very concerned to see it go there. But there are tendencies.
Yep.
You need to be cognizant and need to prepare yourself to provide a good answer.
That's also one of the reasons why we're thinking voluntary, though, because we are very conscious of the fact there's so many different requirements globally. But anyway, I'll stop. Yukio.
Thank you, Sue. We agree that the wider corporate reporting is growing in prominence and importance, and the ISB should consider its future role in this area. However, my understanding is that the ISB members are experts in the area of financial reporting, and the ISB should carefully consider whether it has the ability to play a more role in other areas. Given the limited resources of ISB, we do not support dedicating its resources to developing guidance that is not mandatory. So we do not think that the ISB has collected enough evidence to conclude whether and how MCPS should be revised, and therefore ISB should continue research in this area.
Thank you. Kimberly.
First of all, I want to say that we are very supportive of the proposals here. I totally agree that there's a lot going on in the external reporting space, and it's very important to be part of the ISB, to be part of that process. Particularly people questioning the relevance of financial reporting, we need to understand what's going on out there and how does that relate to financial reporting. Coincidentally, we've just added to our agenda a project on management commentary because we can see that there is a lot going on now, and we believe we do have a part to play in that. I agree that it would be a very useful exercise to update the management commentary document. I think the fact that it's non-mandatory doesn't devalue from the purpose of doing that. I mean, the key reasons it's non-mandatory is because of all the legislative requirements already out there, but that doesn't change the fact that it is useful. You've already referenced a number of ways that it has been used to date, and I think if it is updated, it actually could be a very powerful tool for going forward and actually getting some consistency in some of those broader frameworks. In addition to things you've talked about, is to what's happened since it was first developed and what you need to update it for. I very much endorse Andreas's comments around looking to the conceptual framework around the objective of financial reporting and the qualitative characteristics and tying that into that. I mean, we've had experience of doing this recently. We've just finishing a standard on service performance reporting for the public and not-for-profit sector, which is non-financial reporting, but we see that as a key part of a general purpose financial report, because you can't actually understand what's the performance of the entity without understanding its service performance. And so when we look at our objectives around decision making, funders making funding decision, donors making funding decisions, so for decision making for accountability purposes, we see that's essential. And we started out with the objectives and qualitative characteristics, and that's a very clear part of our service performance standard. That's our starting point, and that's then led to what we set in a space where we've actually had to set those requirements for a very wide range of entities across the not-for-profit and the public sector, with a variety of legislative requirements we had to fit into. So it was a challenge to do that, but we've managed to do that in a way that I think is actually I think a way that you can see how those objectives and qualitative characteristics tie back. And I think if you do it that way, that then that does start what may be the first step. And I know that sometimes it's scary looking beyond that, and I certainly echo that that's not where you should be going into that broader public policy domain. But I think there is a place for an updated management commentary that then ties in with the objectives and QCs of financial reporting, and I think will also tie into the POD project that comes up there with disclosures and the objectives of disclosures. What belongs here, what belongs in management commentary. So I think it's an ideal time to be doing it while the POD project is undertaken. So all those reasons very much for your support.
Christine?
Thank you. So I also agree with the limited approach that you're taking. I think that it makes sense to not get involved in developing standards, but certainly monitoring and considering moves that are consistent with the mission of the organization. I think to go further, we need to, as standard setters, think about what our competitive advantage would be in this space. And one competitive advantage might be the ability to mandate, but it doesn't seem like there's an appetite to do that. So if we set that competitive advantage aside, then our other competitive advantage might be, as you said, David, to take this huge group of competing standards and bring some order to it. But without the mandate piece of it, I would be concerned that we as standard setters would not replace the mix, but would become part of the mix. And then I'm not sure that, societally speaking, it's a good use of resources because it just adds to the confusion potentially. I do think that in terms of updating the practice statement through the additional work that you're doing, if you can justify doing that kind of independently of this ESG initiative, if you could say there are good reasons for us to go forward with that, that might give you more latitude in investing resources towards it. But that has to be done in the context of thinking about what the voluntary uptake has been, which it sounds like it's been somewhat limited, and the fact that, as Andreas pointed out, it may be competing against mandated standard requirements that are coming from other parts of the regulatory structure within a country, and so then, you know, that might then push back against not putting so much resource towards that effort. Just a reaction to what Kim was saying about putting or trying to mandate the financial report and what that would what components of that is required to be in an integrative report. I'm certainly sympathetic to the concern that you've got, you know, pieces of financial statements out there without the footnotes. The question I would have is whether that is within the mandate of the ISB to mandate that a full set of financial statements be included, or is that going to be in some jurisdictions under the rights of the securities regulator, for example. And then my last point is just with respect to the SEC, I know that there was a discussion on page 12 about some of the things that are changing in the U.S. and how that might impact things. And of course, no crystal balls. I don't own one of those. So it's pretty early to tell with Jake Clayton, our new SEC chair, what his position is on a lot of things. I did go back and look to see when the last time was that there was a mention of this in a speech by the SEC, and the one that I found was a June 2016 speech that was by Mary Jo White, and she said, quote, that it would be important for folks to recognize the limits of SEC authority as it relates to environmental, social, and governmental matters. So that was in the context of a discussion that was that the SEC was more on the side of encouraging voluntary reporting, but did not seem to have an appetite to start mandating. And I'd be surprised, given the current environment, that there's going to be much change there. So last but not least, I think that the FASB, our position is sort of similar to the monitor, and think about it in the context of what would fit within our mission, but we don't have the MD&A piece of it anyway, so it's not quite the same. Thanks.
Alexandra?
Well, I start off with a disclaimer here because I also sit on the board of IRC, yeah. So I'm a little bit more optimistic than you. But a small comment here. I really want one dimension about support that I believe it is very important. You didn't mention it is education, because IR is on the syllabus of most accounting qualifications in this country. For example, you cannot become an accountant today without having a deep understanding of IR. So it's an important recognition of the importance of this practice for the profession. So I believe this is an important element. If you go into the stock exchange, there are a lot of other stock exchanges. For example, São Paulo Stock Exchange requires that from 2010. Mm-hmm. Just comply or explain a basis. So there are a big list of exchanges that are already required. Another element that I believe is very important, you mentioned, for some people it's the most important element, is the asset manager's side of the story, because there is just been published a paper by George Serafin from Harvard. And he is, because you mentioned it as an emerging academic literature, he's already challenged the academic literature on that, which is, in my view, is not so emerging. And he's listing the asset managers, especially Scandinavian asset managers, that only invest in companies that actually release an integrated report. From a personal perspective, I've been in touch with those investors, and it's actually there's something they have to tick. If you do not have an integrated report, they're not going to invest in your company. And it's a significant number of investors managing a significant amount of money. So it's a very important drive of the recent movement on integrated reporting. If you don't have one, you don't get certain very good investors, because long-term oriented, they are not very aggressive on short-term goals. So it's a kind of, if there exists a good investor in that sense. So in my view, I believe the momentum is a little bit stronger than you portrayed here. It is really, I don't see any chance of this sort of thing coming back to an early stage. I believe it is here to stay. So having said that, with that disclaimer in mind, I will say that, as Andreas mentioned, this is going to be very fool not to get involved with that, because it's not going to reverse this movement. And I believe that a few approaches here the board can take. It's a few options. The first one, Andreas started to mention, it's, well, let's make the life of the user or the preparer a little bit easier. So when you guys use the same concept as is very important for IRC and IASB, at least use the concept in the same way. Because like materiality, for example, is a completely different concept, used in a completely different way. And a few times you mention extent of disclosures. Again, you get different extent of disclosures. The required extent of a specific disclosure is completely different on the framework, IRC framework and IASB. That's important. So I believe that's what we call the narrow strategy, would be at least to make things integrated, okay? Because now preparers, they are dealing with both frameworks, they have to comply with both frameworks, so if we make them more integrated, it's that another approach, which is to change a little bit the focus of the financial reporting standards, IFRS, is to consider those standards with a bigger extent. For example, you see the discussion that we have here. We always discuss the accounting technique and which is the economic reason behind that accounting technique, which is the best accounting technique, etc. Rarely we discuss which sort of integrated or more global information that should be released with that and that information. For example, we discuss a given expense. We rarely discuss which additional information should be given related to that expense and how that relates to the sustainable performance of the company. So this is going to be a broader strategy, which is to consider the financial reporting standards in the context of a more sustainable approach to reporting. So I believe there are a lot of things here in between, which is a more narrow approach, so just to make people's life easier, to make things comfortable, harmonize it, and then to see financial reporting on a broader context, which is not generally. If you look at take any given IFRS standard, it's all about how to account for things, isn't it?
Yeah.
The mandatory disclosure, but there is no requirement to put that disclosure or that specific accounting in a broader business performance, except for the business model on financial instruments that you have to go a little bit deeper and show that. So I definitely agree that the board must have a strategy. I would prefer a broader strategy because I believe that there is no reversal in this movement, but at least integration approach. You know what I mean? Make what do we have integrated with. Otherwise, we users can. You see, auditors have an important part here because they have to issue audit reports or integrated reporting. They still don't know how to do that yet, because they say, "How do I say that this is an integrated report?" Mm. Normally, what they say, "These numbers are according to IFRS in the integrated report," but they don't say, "This is an integrated report according to the framework." So it's an important constituent to be engaged. So I believe that's. Big road here, bottom road here.
Thank you, so positive endorsement. Patrick.
A few points. The first one is that you mentioned the difference in perspective as regards to users. I think that the starting point, as it was mentioned here, is probably to be very careful about restricting users to investors and the like. I think the broader perspective is needed, and that's what is in fact underlying in the trend for non-financial information. So when we restrict financial information to the information for investors, we are, I think, too restrictive. And therefore, if we want to go further in the direction of financial information, we have, in my view, to broaden the user's the dimension. And this is, as you mentioned, a very strong feeling on the continent, in the general. Second point, there is a real interest around non-financial information, because there is a real issue. Everybody is realizing that, yes, financial information is not the alpha and omega of information in general about businesses. Now, the issue is that if people recognize that it's very, very high level, then when you drill down, the level of recognition of the extent of the issue vary. And as regards the potentials ways forward, there is a very, very large spectrum of possible outcomes. If I may refer to a personal experience, 2000 and 2001, the organization I was working for produced two books on non-financial reporting. And at that time, in the foreword, I was saying that we were counting on a voluntary movement around so important concepts, and that we were great believers that the wisdom of, you know, everybody would create a change in behavior. That was 17 years ago. So I have my reservations about the success of a fully voluntary move. My next point is that, and that will please the accountants in the room, so I suspect we have some. I am a great believer, and I think it would be extremely wise, when you consider non-financial information, to start from the pivotal nature of financial information, i.e., to make sure that, unlike what you mentioned, King, you don't set aside financial information as something you may want to after one or two or five to get to. It is the starting point. Anything that is not related to financial information somehow, I think, has a lower quality or is at risk of having a lower quality in intrinsic quality and also in capacity to be audited. So the pivotal nature of financial information, that doesn't mean that is the ultimate information, not at all, but management reporting, CSR reporting, ESG should be somehow coherent with financial information. Now, if we consider your questions, in specific questions about how to move forward, first of all, I think we need to recognize that we have a standard setting issue on this topic, non-financial information. There is no standard setter, or too many, which is the same.
Yeah.
So, and I think that accounting standard setters have a competitive advantage because they have a methodology. Mm. They know how to do that. They know how to produce. It's a bit burdensome somehow sometimes because the process is it's a long-term project. It's and you need to be patient. You need it's difficult. But nevertheless, there is a level of guarantee on the quality that is, as I said, for financial information, accounting standard setting is a good methodology. So the competitive advantage is fine. However, we don't have the mandate. Nobody is asking us. On the contrary, I mean, the governance consultation was clear about that. I don't see that as it's not interesting. I don't see that the ISB couldn't do it. I see that as long as a reasonable agreement is not reached in terms of who's going to issue the standards, ISB shouldn't embark upon something significant. Which doesn't mean that, doesn't mean nothing. It doesn't mean nothing. So, being a strong supporter of non-financial information personally, and I think my board is with me on this topic, I think we need to discuss the sovereignty issue first. Because there are so many fears about the development of non-financial information floating around, that you need some sort of a reasonable political agreement first, which I think is difficult. And I don't expect G20 in Hamburg will bring a lot of surprises on this topic. Maybe Angela will do something. or Emmanuel. Or together. Seriously. So in the current, in the prevailing circumstances, I think that ISB cannot. I would have three recommendations, orientations. First one, of course, you have to follow carefully, and your document is very interesting. David, thank you. Because you need to monitor, and monitor very closely what's going on. You know, you have so many self-proclaimed experts, so many self-proclaimed standard setters. Well, I mean, the gimmick is not going to work. I mean, what ISB has been doing in the accounting standard setting, in accounting standards, will not be duplicated in the non-financial information standard setting, my view.
No.
Well, you have people believing it, maybe, but unless it becomes on the basis of a political agreement.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, point one, monitoring.
Yeah.
Point two, research, yes. And point three, if I may, in reviewing the accounting standards, paving the way to the linkage between financial information and non-financial information. I think in particular to the conceptual framework, and I think in particular to users. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. Thank you. Andrew.
Thank you. Well, the EPRAG formal position on what the board should do in the wider corporate reporting space hasn't changed since our response to the 2015, I think it was, strategy and effectiveness review. But the EPRAG board has asked to have a discussion on wider corporate reporting. We might be able to fit that in later in the year. And if David or another colleague was able to come to Brussels, I'm sure the board would love to.
I'm missing Brussels so much.
Come and enjoy the EPRAG sandwiches. So, like you, we are sort of in a monitoring mode, and I won't repeat what Patrick has said around the need for monitoring. I do think sometimes this debate seems to be rather motivated by concerns that changes in wider corporate reporting are somehow threatening the relevance of the financial statements. And of course, the board needs to work continuously to maintain and enhance the relevance of financial statements. But again, probably consistent with what Patrick has just said, I believe that in some ways the more companies are talking about their business model, about how they create value, the more the accountability role and the confirmatory role of audited, reasonably structured, quite standardised, disciplined financial statements become more relevant in that context. That can't be taken for granted forever. I do think it's important that competition for agenda space, that's where there are issues like pollutant pricing mechanisms, perhaps the broader political and social interest in these topics is taken into account in deciding whether it should fit into the board's agenda priorities. Stranded carbon assets is a topic which is sometimes raised in the European Parliament, for example. So these things do need to be taken into account as part of the ongoing maintenance of relevance. But we shouldn't be thinking in too much of a sort of defensive or threatened mode, I'd suggest to you. Just on the presentation, which I thought was an excellent summary of this confusing landscape. Some other commentators have said, well, you could say it's a confusing landscape, sure, but alternatively you could say actually that we are in a stage of rapid innovation in wider corporate reporting with a healthy competition, different ideas, frameworks, models, and for a time at least, and I won't say how long that time might be, the market forces can help sort of weed out what works and what doesn't work. And to the extent that embracing good practices in environmental, social, and governance factors, integrated reporting actually is good for business, then business will presumably increasingly adopt those models of its own accord. And finally, just picking up on, I'll just kind of support what Christine was saying, I'm not quite clear what you would see as the sort of, if this confusing landscape does need some kind of coalescing force, focal point, I'm not quite sure what you would see as the possible mechanisms of effect by which an updated practice statement would have that coalescent effect. Mm-hmm. How's it going to actually work to bring together these different frameworks, models, or is it more the field of dreams approach? If you build it, they will come.
I think it's
element of both, I think, a bit of Field of Dreams, a bit of what Patrick was saying, well, if you take your financial information as your central pillar, can we use a competitive advantage that the board already has and the product it has in IFRS to use that as the basis, which may then help people think about the role of financial information and, to Kim's point, what do you put into an integrated report and then what flows from it in terms of thinking more broadly and how you report. Not easy. But
the board will not be able to do it alone.
Exactly. No, I very much agree with that. Yeah.
If you don't.
Yes.
It's a fair challenge and it's something the board talked about a lot.
Yeah.
Whether a voluntary approach was, going to achieve anything. And I think that some of the ideas were, for example, that regulators, etc., in different jurisdictions might get behind it, but I think it absolutely would need to be a partnership.
Yeah.
EH?
Thank you, Sue. Well, from AUSSG, we had three country responses, one from China and Malaysia and Korea. And regarding the role of the ISB, China sent a very short message. China agrees to the view of the staff. Both should play more active role. That is it. And Malaysia also supported the suggestion of the staff, emphasizing the active role. But Malaysia said it does not mean that ISB will develop standard for sustainability reporting, integrated reporting, or any other wider corporate reporting. And Korea was not 100% supportive. And Korea said ISB should continue its current stance of cooperation and coordination. Non-financial information, which has no agreed standards or multiple standards, should not be included in the financial reporting. And Korea further suggested that staff research needs to be extended in the future, so that the board will be able to determine, based on the research, whether the boundary of financial reporting should be extended. And if the answer is yes, to what extent? And regarding the second issue, amendment of the policy statement, China didn't have any comment. Malaysia has a strong disagreement with the suggestion. Malaysia actually said, we believe the ISB should give priority to research pipeline projects instead of adding a policy statement to the work plan. If ISB does not give priority to accounting issues, divergent practices will continue to exist and impair comparability and quality of financial information. For example, we recommend that ISB to give a higher priority to the research project on provisions instead of policy statement, as the ISB has already acknowledged that the practical implications of the lack of guideline in ISB 37 might become more pronounced when companies start to apply IFRS 15 and stakeholders have identified the need for clarification in a number of areas relating to onerous contracts. And Korea also did not really support the suggestion. What Korea said was, we do not agree with the staff's view, considering the wide landscape of the multiple framework, standards, goals, and codes in the wider corporate reporting arena, and the voluntary application of those guidelines, amending existing practice statement to reflect various guidelines might impair the relevance and stability of the practice statement. Amending the practice statement is temporary expedient and could not address diversity in wider corporate reporting. So that's the responses.
Thank you very much. I'm Linda, and then I'll come to Chung Wu. Linda?
So I'm going to keep it brief because many people have covered some of the thoughts ahead anyway, and that's fine. But, just a couple of points. I would say you shouldn't underestimate the ability of this organization to raise awareness and bring influence to this area. From my perspective, there is the competitive advantage of mandating, but there's also the competitive advantage of bringing awareness and educating people. So, for instance, I thought this was a great presentation, David. Really enjoyed it. I learned from it. I think my board will learn from it. So I intend to have a conversation with my board next week. And don't underestimate just the general ability of these discussions to kind of raise the bar. In terms of the management commentary practice statement, in Canada we have not brought that into play because we have, the MD&A is the domain of the securities regulator. But if you're going to update it, and I understand that there's probably jurisdictions that use it and would rely on it, then just I would take into consideration the wider outreach so that you're specifically dealing with regulators. What we would do is we would make sure that we were having conversations with our securities regulators in conjunction with this, any process that you institute. And that has a tendency to kind of raise the bar everywhere in terms of people being on the same page and having the same dialogue. So I see it as a use of your influence in generally raising the bar on things and quite frankly, providing education.
Thank you very much. A short clarification to Ono-san, please. You said, are you in favor on the question two here? Our question that David raised, so the management commentary practice statement, can you include this idea in that practice statement? Even though you said a little asking us for further research, but is it possible? You are good at with that suggestion?
I think you can do the more research. So I'm not sure how to do that.
So Japan is not included in the survey of the AOSSG.
No.
So that's why I'm asking what your specific position on this question too, because we are going to launch the kind of a proposal to amend this practice statement to include.
You're peeking ahead.
I think you've jumped a few. We're going to research the.
Absolutely. But to make a more constructive research, we need to more some clear preference of our advisory board members. So that's very important for us to think. So that's why I'm asking.
Okay.
Let's research first.
Yes.
Part of our research.
Yeah.
Right. Was there anything additional from China? Or did EH cover all of the points, the ones that they've sent you as well?
I think so. They, in the comments we've got here, they are in general support of the strategy for wider corporate reporting, which I think is what they said, and accept the lack of lack of universal reporting framework, and think the board should make the decision after sufficient investigation.
Okay. All right, so lots of good input for you to think about, David.
Thank you very
much. I look forward to the
yes.
recommendations that you bring to us based on that.
Thanks for five more staff. Well, thank you for your time.
It was a good discussion.
Thank you.
Interesting. Lots of interesting points. Okay, now changing gear completely.